Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Streams of Winter, Livestream 5, Sansa Stark.
Hello and welcome to The Streams of Winter. I'm Yoke Boy and we are Radio Westeros. And thank you all so much for showing up in our live stream today. This afternoon we'll be focusing on none other than the very popular Sansa Stark in The Winds of Winter. This relates to our new episode, The Winds of Winter Primer Part 2, which is currently on its patron rollout and will be out for public release this week. What will be Sansa's role in the upcoming book? It's an intriguing set of questions. To help me answer them, here's the other half of Radio Westeros, Lady Gwyn.
Hello! Hi, everyone! Thank you so much for being here today. Very excited to talk about Sansa, and especially excited to talk about Sansa with today's guests. Welcome, Chloe.
Hello.
Thank you for being here. We're very happy to have you. I know we're all excited for Sansa. We were talking just a minute ago about that. Even Yoke Boy is excited.
I'm very excited.
Yeah. Okay. Quick reminder, everyone, about spoilers. Everything is fair game. Books, sample chapters, and references to the show. We usually avoid that in our regular episodes, but here, anything goes. Spoilers, everything. So let's get started. Back over to you, Yoke Boy.
Okay, let's begin. In the Elaine, The Winds of Winter sample chapter, we learn of an upcoming tourney in the Vale that will be attended by local warriors and the highest echelons of Vale society. Now, there always seems to be surprising and major events at these tourneys. So what happens at this one? Lady Gwyn, why don't you set us off?
I will set us off with a few of the ideas that the fandom has come up with. Number one being those clansmen in the Mountains of the Moon. Tyrion armed them, promised them the Vale. Tourney would sure be a great opportunity for them to, have all the major lords of the Vale in one place. So that's one thought that people have had. Another one, which seems pretty clearly to be leading somewhere, we have Sir Shadrick, the Mad Mouse, who is right there at the Gates of the Moon. He's referred to Sansa as, in the past, to Brienne as a bag of gold. In her Winds of Winter sample chapter, he makes comment about stumbling on a bag of gold. So could he be up to something? Could Lyn Corbray, who is in that same passage, noted to be willing to do anything for gold and to have some sort of very confusing allegiance to Littlefinger. Is he pretending to be his enemy while pretending to be his friend while really being his enemy or really be? Sansa's confused. I think some of us are too. So could be he have something up his sleeve for the tourney or possibly something else?
So you've given us plenty of options for this tourney, intriguing options. Chloe, why don't you tell us what you think about this tourney? Do you have any ideas?
Absolutely. I wrote this really extensive thing a very long time ago that I don't know if I fully agree with it anymore because opinions change after like 3, 4, 5, how many years?
Too many.
But opinions change, right? Yes, you change your opinions very often. and we're allowed to do that. You can write a 16-page Google Doc essay about something and then decide it's garbage a month later. It's not a big deal, everyone. But a long time ago, I was thinking about how there isn't a ton of Vale history, right? There's nothing right off the top of your head that you think about. However, there is one thing that I think is pretty loosely related to this tourney, and that is the Tourney of the Winged Knights is what this is being dubbed. But the Battle of the Seven Stars during the Andal invasion feels really similar. So pull out your history books, get out the tomes, right? Call Maester Gildane, get him on the phone. The whole gist of the Battle of the Seven Stars during the Andal invasion is that the Andals prevailed over the First Men and took the Vale. Once the Vale was under Andal control, the remaining houses ended up joining together to try to get rid of Ardis Aran. They joined behind Robar Royce, a familiar name, and they tried to fight the Winged Knight, Ardis Aran, but they eventually were defeated. Robar Royce is slain in battle, the remainder of the First Men kneel, and that's how the Arans got the Vale. That's the story ever since. But here's where it gets interesting. In the Battle of the Seven Stars, there were two parties. There were the First Men and the Andals. On Team First Men, we had House Royce, Redfert, Upcliff, Hunter, Belmore, Coldwater, and Shett. They were all led by King Robar II Royce, Ursula Upcliff, and Lord Redfert. On Team Andal, we had House Grafton, Cor Bray, Ruthermont, Templeton, who are led by Sir Ardis Aran, Lord Ruthermont, Sir Lucian Templeton, and Sir Jaime Cor Bray. There were really notable casualties on both sides of these nobles, but the First Men, as usual, seemed to suffer a little bit more than the Andals because the Andals won. So when we open up with the Winds of Winter Elaine won, with those in mind, we're presented with the Tourney of the Winged Knights. Elaine herself proposed this to offer Sweet Robin confidence and 8 winged knights to protect him. And of course we know Littlefinger loves it because he can use it as his own scheming playground. These 8 winged knights would be Robert Aaron's Kingsguard, right? I originally wrote this a little before Fire and Blood came out, a couple years before, so I think George might also be playing with that Kingsguard tourney from Fire and Blood in the future. I think that's something to look out for as a sandbox for Sansa, but we'll get into that later. When we look at the Vale right now, it's divided as ever, and instead of Team Andal and Team First Men, you could actually separate it with very similar houses to Team Littlefinger, Lord Gerald Grafton, Lionel Lynn Cor Bray, Simon Templeton, Robert Aran, and Harry Harding, and then Team Lords Declarant, which is Lord Bronzion Royce, Horton Redford, Gilwood Hunter, Benadar Belmore, and Ben Coldwater. Basically, this aligns with the Battle of the Seven Stars in almost an exact parallel, that Team Littlefinger is Team Andal, and the Lord Declarants are Team First Men, right down to the cultural, this is our land, and you, Littlefinger, are invading. So I feel like we're going to see Team First Men win. Maybe it might not be in the Winds of Winter, but it might be overarching throughout the series that the Team First Men group, the Lords Declarant, end up kind of surviving and getting their land back. And the tourney choosing the Winged Knights is such an interesting choice considering the Vale's history with that. So I wonder if those two sides will also have anything about who gets chosen as a Winged Knight.
And who would you say would be chosen? Do you have any ideas on that, Chloe? Have you got a kind of list hidden up your sleeve?
I have too many lists, Yoke Boy. I have so many lists. I have Excel spreadsheet lists. I have whatever you want. Okay, but yes, this list. I'm thinking that a handful are going to be no names, right? We have kind of this time in the Winds of Winter for George to get to have fun with the Vale, get to play with the Vale. So I'm wondering if we'll see Michael Redfert, Marwyn Belmore, Uther Shat, Ben Coldwater, Albert Royce, Sir Owen, Targon the Halfwild, and maybe even a new House Upcliff member, because there's something like 45 eligible-ish bachelors that you can count throughout all the books of the Vale people, just from, you know, scrolling through appendices, etc. There's about 45 eligible dudes that could be the Winged Knight.
So from intriguing characters to possible historical parallels, this tourney really should be something in the Winds of Winter. I'm really looking forward to it. Now, let's move on. In A Feast for Crows, it's made plain that Littlefinger is encouraging Maester Coleman to use Sweet Sleep on poor Sweet Robin. Sweet Sleep is a relaxant at a low dose, but is a poison at a higher dose. And remember how small Sweet Robin is. Given Littlefinger's apparent plans for the Harry the Heir plot, does this mean Sweet Robin will die of this cause in the Winds of Winter? Lady Gwyn, will he be poisoned?
Well, there's no doubt he's being poisoned. I think in our new episode, we counted up the number of times, just like in recent, you know, the last couple of chapters, he's been dosed with this stuff. Way too many. It's like 5 or 6 in every time Maester Coleman's going, no more. He's definitely being poisoned. Will he die? I have always thought that, yes, he probably will. I know some people don't agree with me, but it could go either way. Obviously, if we lean on the show a little bit, he didn't die in the show. And, you know, that could be a factor of they didn't really know what to do with this character. Maybe all they knew was that he lived. And maybe that explains why his arc in the show was so bizarre. I don't know. But I definitely think that there is no doubt that he is being poisoned to a dangerous level.
Okay, and why don't we chart it into a kind of controversial territory? Do you think Sansa knows about this plot and understands it? What do you think?
This is the big question, isn't it? This all roads lead back to this question. Is she complicit? Even on the level of understanding what Coleman is saying, you know, what the implications of him being repeatedly dosed with this, you know, there is a level where she's hearing these warnings on the one hand, and on the other hand, you see her thinking, we just have to do it. We have no choice. So I wonder, you know, does she know the depth of the plot, or is it just kind of, you know, she's been made to be complicit in it, and maybe, hopefully at some point, she realizes that this is going in a very bad direction.
Chloe, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this topic. Are you in agreement with Lady Gwyn here?
Sweet Robin lives forever, so jot that down, yeah. Lady Gwyn. Just putting that out there. If you don't agree, meet me outside, socially distancing. We'll fight about it.
Fight.
No, I'm just kidding.
From 6 feet apart.
Never fight you.
We'll throw ice cubes at each other.
Yeah, it'll be much more fun. No, I do think, so I feel, and maybe this is just, I feel like it's a big screw you, right, to make him live instead, especially with Littlefinger all, sickly boys can grow up to be very strong. I think people underestimate Sweet Robin's role. And I do think, so we get that duality of Sansa, right? She approaches Littlefinger and compartmentalizes Littlefinger and compartmentalizes her role in the things that he does. I mean, he's already implicated her in regicide, but she might not fully understand the context of that. But in the same hand, while he says that, it's like he's handing her a bouquet of roses and saying, but sweetie, you're so much safer with me. Aren't you grateful? Oh my God. And it's totally a jerk move, right? We know this. No one likes Littlefinger. If you do, stop. But Sansa, she knows she's poisoning Sweet Robin. Like, she kind of knows deep down. And I think it is going to be a big plot point. I agree with you there that is the million-dollar question. What's she going to do about it? Is she going to keep poisoning him and kill him, basically, by keep agreeing? I don't know. I've pondered on it back and forth. I think that she will not keep doing it. I think there will be a couple chapters, but I almost feel like it might become leverage, right? We have all these things that eventually I know we're going to chat about with Sansa's loved ones that have been betrayed because of Littlefinger and how she kind of hasn't digested that because she's like, Peter's a nice man. Littlefinger is this smarmy a-hole. It's a weird, like, but to stay safe, she thinks she has to be with him. So I think there's going to be a power paradigm that changes where it could become, no, I'm not going to keep poisoning him. And if you want me to poison him, then maybe I should tell everyone in the Vale that you're withholding food from them and driving the prices up to starve them out. Like, I know about your scheme, so I wonder if it's going to become kind of a leverage in the cat and mouse kind of relationship they might have going forward.
That's interesting, and I think we're going to come to, you know, the dynamics between Littlefinger and Sansa later on, for sure. But let's suppose that Robin did die, just for a second. What would be the reaction of the Vale Lords if one day Robin didn't wake up and Sweet Sleep had killed him, Lady Gwyn?
Yes. Oh, well, I mean, they're expecting him to die. I think right now he's Littlefinger kind of nails it. He says the Lords of the Vale will never love me, nor our silly shaking Robert. I mean, they're all just kind of sitting there thinking that this kid is a pathetic weakling, and, you know, how could this be Jon Arryn's heir? I don't think they would applaud if they thought someone murdered him, but I think they would be unsurprised if he died because he has this, you know, sickness that goes back his entire existence. It should not come as a surprise to them that someone like that might die suddenly.
You know what their relationship really feels like? It reminds me a lot of Mary and Colin in Secret Garden.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It reminds me a lot of that, mm-hmm. that, you know, Sansa shows up. She's a queer and hated girl, too, obviously, in the Eyrie. Mm-hmm. We know how Lysa felt about her, and she's nothing special. And, of course, you have the little master with his temper tantrums and his screaming and yes. his flinging of food. It very much feels like that sort of scenario for me.
Yes, I agree. That was one of my favorite books.
Okay, so time will tell what happens to Sweet Robin. We've had a variety of opinions here. So, moving on, the Harry the Heir plot was pretty convoluted and a surprising entry into A Feast for Crows, and one that might shape Sansa's immediate future. The reader currently harbours doubts about Harry himself, while acknowledging that he might merely be a pawn in Littlefinger and Sansa's Game of Thrones. Do we think Sansa will go through with this marriage in order to further her own ambitions? This is a big question, so I'm going to break it down. Lady Gwyn, first of all, do you think Harry is capable of, for once, being decent to Sansa, something she hasn't really experienced?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. He's instantly unlikable. He's just presented as a jerk, right? Pretty much from the start. He's arrogant. You know, he's fathered two bastards already. He's very, very mean to Elaine when he shows up. We're just pretty much being made to despise him. And then in their first, at the feast, he's telling her that all about his current mistress and their child. So, I mean, he's really a tool, but you see her in that chapter kind of start to win him over. And I wonder if that's the beginning of a process where she does win him over and he turns out to be, you know, kind of okay, maybe likable, maybe not. Maybe a tool is exactly the right word. He's not really a terrible person. He's just someone that's being used.
I could definitely see that that might be being set up. So what will become of him, Lady Gwyn?
Well, for this question, I say take a look at the fate of any other young, insert heraldic animal here, character. The young wolf, the young dragon. Their arcs were brief and bright, over before we even knew about it. So I would expect that the young falcon would be something similar to that.
Okay, so you're talking about his part in the plot being bright but very short. He burns out quickly. So, Chloe, tell me, could Harry die in this very tourney that we've been discussing? Could we be caught off guard, and, you know, his story's over as it began.
I would double down and say I 120% know he will die in this dang tourney, Yoke Boy, and I will tell you why. So everything that Lady Gwyn just said is absolutely correct, especially when you consider the very first time that Sansa goes to a tourney. Do you remember that back in Game of Thrones Sansa 2? Sansa, of course, and Jaime are sitting with Septa Mordain and a young man from the Vale. And the line goes, his cloak was blue, the color of the sky on a clear summer's day, trimmed with a border of crescent moons. But as his blood seeped into it, the cloth darkened and the moons turned red one by one. And then, of course, she thinks after. It would be different if it had been Jory or Sir Roderick or father, she told herself. The young knight in the blue cloak was nothing to her. Some stranger from the Vale of Arryn, whose name she had forgotten as soon as she had heard it. And now the world would forget his name, too. Sansa realized there would be no songs sung for him. That was sad. Thinking of Harry the Heir as this sudden up-jump squire, we hear from all of these side characters in the Vale, Lothar Brune. Everyone says, oh, Elaine, that guy's garbage. Don't feel bad. He's not even good. They just gave him the knighthood so that he could, you know, go compete because he's a rich boy who's bored and his dad's had to do it. I think the biggest signifier for me is his name. And I know this sounds silly, but George is very about names. Look at Cat of the Canals at the same time as Elaine Stone, Catalane. It all makes Catalan, right? Very clever, very nice little just name things that George does. And I love the pseudonyms he uses. But when we look at Harry, his name, his last name is literally Hare Dying. That's literally his last name. He's a red, also, he's a red Hare Dying, a red herring. That's what he is. I think he's a red herring, and I think George wants us to think he's going to be this big part of the plot, but it kind of takes away Sansa's agency, and it feels like The Winds of Winter is very much going to be Sansa finally getting some agency. If she has to rely on Harry the Heir, I don't want a story like that. Come on now. Gross.
Mm-hmm. No, I know. I'll add one more thing that I had here. When Sansa's praying in the Sept before the Blackwater, she thinks about Joffrey. Well, they start praying for Joffrey, and she kind of storms out. Let his sword break and his shield shatter. Let his courage fail him and every man desert him. And then when Harry shows up in the Vale, she's thinking that he's very handsome, but then she reminds herself, well, Joffrey was also handsome. And then Harry turns out to be a kind of an arse. He calls her Littlefinger's bastard and etc. She thinks to herself, may your horse stumble, Harry the Heir, so you fall on your stupid head in your first tilt.
So, well, be careful what you wish for, Sansa.
Well, sounds like a line that could be foreshadowing. I'm sure everyone's quite familiar with some of the foreshadowing that George does, and that does ring a few bells there. So whether he lives or dies in this tourney, I think we can all agree that ultimately he's just going to be another stepping stone and soon to be casualty in the grand Sansa plan, whatever that may be. We'll get to that. So while we're talking about marriages, Lady Gwyn, why don't you tell us your thoughts about Sansa's current marriage to Tyrion? Because that kind of gets in the way, right?
It gets in the way of something, I guess. Yeah. Littlefinger certainly sees it as an impediment in A Feast for Crows when he first talks about this marriage that he's, this betrothal that he's made for her. He needs to either get rid of Tyrion, you know, Tyrion has to die, or Tyrion has to be somehow dealt with. And he says also that Cersei has to be finished, because obviously Cersei's on the, you know, she's actively searching for Sansa, who she thinks had something to do with Joffrey's death. Well, yes, she did, because she wished for him to die, so Sansa gets what she wishes for, so. But I don't know how that will change in The Winds of Winter, so in order for her to, you know, marry or potentially marry anyone, I'm not sure how that could change. So I think that said, that could be, a, you know, something that supports the idea that Harry just kind of comes and goes pretty quickly.
Okay, so Harry coming and going pretty quickly, but let's talk about the plan, because the plan wasn't for him to come and go very quickly. Littlefinger's objectives regarding Sansa and Harry are laid out in this following quote from Elaine to A Feast for Crows. When they come together for his wedding, and you come out with your long auburn hair, clad in a maiden's cloak of white and grey with a direwolf emblazoned on the back, why, every knight in the Vale will pledge his sword to win you back your birthright. So those are your gifts from me, my sweet Sansa, Harry the Eyrie and Winterfell. So I think that's a very pertinent quote. If this really is the long game Littlefinger is playing, do we agree that one day Sansa will summon the Knights of the Vale and head off on a northern adventure to reclaim her family home? Chloe, set us off.
Absolutely. Oh, I just thought you wanted the answer. I'm sorry. I got so excited. yes. Yes. No, I think I mentioned it a little bit, but I think it's important that Sansa gets to Winterfell without Littlefinger's help. I think that's one of the most important severing ties for Sansa to start to get some of her own power as a player in the Game of Thrones, right? No longer a pawn. Right now she's growing up, or she's living and growing up where Robert and Ned grew up, right? She already has some very, very strong connections to the Vale. I think it's a bit obvious that Miranda Royce knows she's an imposter, right? Miranda Royce is like, interesting. You suddenly know about Jon Snow by name, the Bastard of the Night's Watch. Very interesting, Sansa Stark. I mean, Elaine Stone, Bastard of the Vale. the Vale wasn't allowed to fight for the North. So not only are there all these little things waiting to go off, Chekhov's cannons, right, of the Vale clan and Shadrach and all this. And I think once Sansa is revealed as herself, which I think is one of the biggest kind of like interruptions to Littlefinger's plan, is probably Shadrach will try to kidnap her. And I think he might fail. I think him failing is what's going to be like, oh, wait, she's important. It's Sansa Stark. But I see in the future, when it comes to Sansa asking to go home, I think it's going to be very much so a reference to Catelyn V in A Game of Thrones, when Catelyn is in the inn and asks the River Lords to support Hoster Tully and his name. Sansa's already in the Vale, where they all wanted to fight for Ned and Robert's kin. So if we take a look at Catelyn V, I was still Catelyn Tully the last time I bedded here, she told the innkeep. She could hear the muttering, feel the eyes upon her. Catelyn glanced around the room at the faces of the knights and sworn swords and took a deep breath to slow the frantic beating of her heart. Did she dare take the risk? There was no time to think it through, only the moment and the sound of her own voice ringing in her ears. You in the corner, is that the black bat of Harrenhal I see embroidered on your surcoat, sir? The man got to his feet. It is, my lady. And his lady went, a true and honest friend to my father, Lord Hoster Tully of Riverrun? She is, the man replied stoutly. Sansa is the reason that the Vale Lords have to uprise. This is it. This is the power. They say we have Ned's precious little girl, right? Ned has two daughters, and when she's revealed, that's all the Vale needs to align behind a First Men cause. And this would be when Littlefinger starts to sweat, right? If Sansa doesn't need him to get home, well, she's going to learn soon she never needed him.
Yes, so the turning point for Sansa must come internally and must be of her own choice and of her own timing. And, you know, maybe she makes a journey and realizes that, you know, Littlefinger doesn't really hold any sway. So hopefully that's what happens. And let's move on to talk about something very personal to Sansa, her sister. Let's talk about Arya now and their kind of sibling rivalry. Sansa and Arya enter the story as foils, oppositional in many respects. However, both are Starks, and we really know in our hearts that they truly love each other beneath this kind of sibling rivalry. So my question is, what is the future in the Winds of Winter for their sibling dynamics, Lady Gwyn?
Well, you know, I have written down this the sun and the moon there, which is a reference to that quote from Ned. He says to Arya in Game of Thrones, "If you must hate Arya, hate those who would truly do us harm. Sansa's your sister. You may be as different as the sun and the moon, but the same blood flows through both your hearts. You need her as she needs you." So Sansa and Arya have been on, like the sun and the moon, these kind of parallel, complementary arcs ever since A Game of Thrones. Their trajectories have been very much in sync. A lot of sort of the beats of what both of them have experienced have been very similar. I think ultimately that's going to bring them back together. I mean, I guess we probably all expect that. So when they get back to where they started, they're both going to have been very changed by the experience that they've been through over the course of this journey, this circular journey that got them from Winterfell, probably back to Winterfell. So I think they both have really, through those experiences, they'll really comprehend the meaning of Ned's advice, which is that they need each other. You know, he goes on in that same passage, he talks about, you know, the pack surviving. So I do think that the pack dynamics are going to be very important to the Starks in the Winds of Winter and beyond.
Yeah, maybe a time for wolves. Chloe, what do you think their relationship is going to look like on the back of so much change? Are they going to be best buddies all of a sudden, or are they going to kind of contain a little bit of resentment just as siblings, but, you know, band together anyway?
I think we'll see a little bit of both, right? They both had such similar experiences as a prisoner of war, as surviving, but yet so different, right? And I think Arya, especially because she's a younger sister, and some of the things she went through might have been a little more violent consistently daily. However, Sansa's violences were very, like, microaggressive. Both had very psychologically disturbing experiences, right, as 14-year-old girls. I think at first it'll be strained. I do. I think they'll have to find home together. I mean, they're coming home to a burnt home, to the loss of their family members. They haven't been allowed to grieve. Something I'm noticing, we're currently going through Jaime on Girls Gone Canon, and the Lannisters have beautiful, huge funeral processions for all these people that keep dying, but they don't want to grieve because they're realizing, wow, my family messed me up. Like, it's this sudden realization, like, hey, maybe Tywin messed us all up. And instead of grieving, they're seething with, like, all this anger and vengeance, where all the Starks want is a funeral. All they want is to inter Ned's bones into his tomb. That's all they could want, to help finish their family's legacy and just to be home. And I think that's going to become more important, especially as the winds rise.
Yeah. And really, that brings us a full circle to Lady Gwyn's analogy of the sun and the moon, maybe two halves of a whole kind of thing, in a yin-yang kind of way.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, so let's move on. Sansa is now in the midst of an archetypal mentor and student relationship with creepy Littlefinger. However, these two make a rather strange pair, and readers sense this partnership won't last forever. To provide some groundwork, Lady Gwyn, why don't you explain to us, why on earth does Littlefinger like Sansa so much?
He doesn't like Sansa. he likes what she represents to him. She is young Catelyn that he couldn't have, couldn't control. She represents him getting one over on the Starks, who stole his Catelyn away from him. You know, it's got nothing to do with her. He saw her as a pliable pawn that he could use while he pursued this bizarre and quite frankly creepy and perverse dream that he has.
Chloe, what do you agree with Lady Gwyn's sentiment?
Oh, yeah. Of course, he's totally projecting. It's everything he could never have finally in his clutches. And it's kind of like a dog chasing his tail. It's like, well, now that I have it, I'm just going to monologue in front of it and hope it goes great. I think like he's just so full of all of his like, I can't believe I did it. I can't believe I have Eddard Stark and Catelyn Tully's daughter in my clutches. And he's so obsessed like with the power and all the stuff he's going to do that he's totally just blind, right? Like the blind spot is Sansa. That's exactly what he's missing. Like that's the maiden that's going to slay the giant right there, because you're too busy being an evil villain, right? Trying to control economies. Should have just been happy with your little fief with Harrenhal. You should have just sat down, but no.
Lady Gwyn, Chloe says that Sansa is Littlefinger's blind spot, his Achilles heel. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, there's a meta purpose to him spilling his guts about everything to Sansa, because she's our window to him. So if he didn't do that in the books, we wouldn't know what the freak he was doing. So, you know, from that point of view, sure. But it suits the narrative as well for him to confide in her and just completely fail to take his own advice about pawns having a will of their own. I mean, he says that to her with no hint of irony. Oh, Sansa, be careful for the pawns. They might have a will of their own. What? He has no vision of her.
He's rather bright, but perhaps he lacks a bit of common sense, especially in, like Chloe said, this blind spot.
Yeah. He doesn't see her at all. He only sees what she represents for him, but he doesn't see her as an individual.
And she's not Catelyn Stark. She's her own character. And I think that's going to be mm-hmm. totally evident in the Winds of Winter. Okay, patron Marie French wonders about how Sansa might discover Littlefinger is a lying piece of shit. So let's look at one of the options here, because there are several options. One we find quite intriguing, looming over their partnership, is the shadow of Jane Poole. Jane was Sansa's bestie growing up, but she ended up being secretly traded by Littlefinger to Ramsay, and I can't think of a worse deal in the entire series there. The reader knows that Jane has suffered due to Littlefinger's selfish puppeteering, but what happens when Sansa finds out? Lady Gwyn, I believe we made a Twitter poll. Would you like to take it away?
We did. We do a Twitter poll every Friday night and read the results on these live streams. So this week's poll was, will Sansa finding out what happened to Jane Poole turn out to be the end of the line for Peter Baelish? And the options were, hell yes, no, he'll weasel out of this somehow, or no, she won't find out. She'll never find out. 58% said, hell yes. 22% thought he might be able to weasel out of it. And 20% felt she would never find out. So I put myself in the hell yes.
Hell yes.
Hell yes.
Okay, so why don't we panel this? Lady Gwyn, will Sansa ever find out? You know, if so, how? And will this factor amount to the end of Peter Baelish?
The how she will find out is what's kind of curious to me, because she would first have to, because for all the world knows, except for Peter Baelish and maybe a handful of Lannisters who suspect, but they don't really know the real story, would be that she'd probably have to go through hearing that her sister Arya has married Ramsay Bolton. And, you know, if you look at the timeline, actually that marriage is probably happening right around the Elaine 1 Winds of Winter chapter. So once we get into the Winds of Winter, Elaine 2 could very well, as part of it, involve her hearing this news. She's noticed in the last two chapters, this one in Winds of Winter and the last Feast for Crows, there's been a lot of kettle black news coming. So, you know, could the next bit of pertinent news involve her sister? And I had a thought just a little while ago that I was trying to puzzle this out, and this had not occurred to me before, but I wondered, and maybe you guys can weigh in on this, if perhaps she hears this and she is so damn upset about her sister being in this marriage, if Littlefinger is so oblivious that he thinks to soothe her by telling her the truth, or a version of the truth. Oh, don't worry, that's not really your sister. That's just some steward's whelp.
That'd be interesting. I would like to like have some sort of nod, because it feels like the only logistical way is for Arya to find out and Arya to come home, because she's going to Braavos. So if Arya somehow meets her before Arya comes back from being no one, then it's like, maybe it would be something that when Sansa's figuring it all out, because I know you and I, Lady Gwyn, have a lot to talk about with the balls as they drop here, you know, of like, there's a handful of very incriminating things about Littlefinger that, like, once that all the cards are on the table, it's over, mm-hmm. buddy. It's over. And she's the big one, because it's the way that he and Cersei, like the blasé way that Cersei was like, get rid of her, do something about it. And Littlefinger then sex traffics her. Like, it's very softly, subtly awful and disgusting. That chapter, if you take some time and want to get really disgusted, go reread real slow and just absorb that chapter where Sansa's like, well, Jane's dad and Jane, they didn't do anything. And then they sex traffic her in response. Awful. Government figures just wasting our tax dragons, and it's awful. But yeah, it has to come to the front. I mean, that's one of the incriminating things. It has to.
If that's one of the incriminating things, one of the most disgusting, what other factors are at play? How else could Littlefinger be taken down? What has he done in his back catalogue? Chloe, have you got any ideas?
Well, I don't know if you remember, but there was this chapter, A Storm of Swords, Sansa 7. Lady Gwyn might remember it. She came on Girls Gone Canon to chat about it, where Littlefinger murders Lysa. I don't know if you guys remember that one. You know, like a high noble lady in society. That's pretty damning. And or there's the time he betrays Ned. Yeah. Pretty damning as well. Sweet Robin poisoning, we've talked about. Mm-hmm. I think there's a good handful, right?
He shot her hero, Ser Dantos, right in front of her, or had him shot, you know. And he was just like, oh, well, he's a loose end. We just had to take care of that. I just think that as these deaths mount, you know, Dantos, Lysa, maybe Sweet Robin, maybe Harry. I mean, I don't know if Littlefinger would be responsible for that, but who knows? She's going to start realizing all this stuff is kind of, they follow a pattern of isolating her and making her fully dependent on him. So then when you start digging deeper and deeper before Dantos, well, then you had Jane Poole and her father and stuff like that. So once she starts to put all those pieces together, she's going to realize, you know, that he's been behind all of this. And we have some thoughts about how she might put the big piece together a little bit later. But I think it's going to be checkmate for him. And I wanted to, before we move on from the poll at all, I just want to shout out to our friend and patron B-Word, who says that Sansa really has to see what Littlefinger is capable of. That I loved this idea that her friendship with Jane was written for a reason. So it's not, this is a book, guys. So George wrote certain things for certain reasons. So it didn't all just happen by accident. And it's not just a big, great tragedy that Jane Poole got taken. There's probably some thought behind it.
Shut her up. Well, she's going to be a huge plot point.
Well, Jane Poole and Ned, her father, you know, it couldn't get more personal with Sansa. And on Radio Westeros in the past, we've talked a lot about mentor and pupil dynamics, this kind of classic archetype. So often the student kind of outgrows the mentor in some way. So will Sansa turn on her mentor and bring him to the justice that he deserves? Chloe, take us away.
I know a lot of people are like, what's Sansa going to do in A Dream of Springs? And it's exactly that. We start the story off with Ned in a Game of Thrones investigating and trying to protect bastards. As we learn, it unravels about him having to do some not so great things and keeping devastating secrets from his family to try to keep them safe, whether they paid off, whether they were good, whether they were bad. And I think that in A Dream of Springs specifically, Sansa will mirror Ned. Very much so. It's what I like to call Stark noir, right? It's a Stark noir plot. Sansa herself has seen all of these awful secrets unfold in King's Landing, in the Vale, and once she gets back to her family, I kind of foresee her playing the same game, right? Protecting her family, including a quote-unquote bastard. Sansa's gonna have to play Baelish's 4D chess, right? And question the direction he's giving her, and I imagine some sort of political diplomatic kind of direction has to be seen because that's who she is in the family, right? Sansa gets politics, Bran gets magic, Arya's the child warrior assassin, Rickon gets left behind, Jon conciliates, right? Like, these are their specific roles as their factions as we move along, and she's going to come to Winterfell with her own allies, not Littlefinger's allies, in her own familial home. She'll have nothing else to do in A Dream of Spring besides prove her political prowess.
So we arrive at the question, something I've gone back and forth over in my mind and changed my mind 100 times. Would Sansa be the one to deliver Northern justice in the name of House Stark by her own hand? Lady Gwyn, why don't you illustrate kind of both sides of the argument here?
Well, I'm going to say that we've made a case in the past for yes. We've even made some suggestions for how that could happen. But just for the obvious reason, you know, Stark justice, we all know what that is. You know, he who passes the sentence should swing the sword. But I think there's a lot to be said for another Ned quote where he talks about the pack surviving together. And I think that gets what Chloe was just saying about, you know, they're parceling out sort of the roles. So there's a lot to be said for Starks acting as a pack after they reunite.
I was going to ask you, Chloe, do you think that Sansa will be reunited in person with Jane Poole in the story, maybe in the Winds of Winter? What do you think?
I hope so. I really do, Yoke Boy. I just, you know, I don't think the story has a ton of happy endings. I know there's been that theory, right, that Jane gets to Braavos and asks for the gift, and Arya gives her the gift, maybe, or something. I don't know if that'll happen. It might be a little edgy or whatever, but I think that's a sad, nice theory in a way. On that same flip side, Jane's already suffered a pretty grievous, not affliction, really. It's not really a grievous affliction, but her nose, right? She's missing part of her nose. And it kind of feels like when George, so to say, cripples a person in the books in some sort of manner physically, they survive for the most part. Not, jury's out on Jaime Lannister, but it kind of feels like you've already hurt him enough, so hopefully you've abused Jane Poole enough and she lives. And Sansa and her have lemon cakes in the kitchens all the time, you know?
Yay.
Yeah, I hope there's some sort of happy ending, but with George, you just never know. There's a lot of tragedy and pain, but that's why we're here, right? Okay, let's move on. Littlefinger is ambitious, but it remains to be seen where those ambitions end. presuming that Sansa one day outgrows him and discards him, and with the thought that Sansa is on the way to becoming a political player in her own right, what is Sansa's ultimate fate? Let's break this down a bit. Let's begin with patron Christine's question, who wonders if Sansa will finally become a player during the Winds of Winter. Lady Wynne, what do you think? Will Sansa become a player in this book?
Yes. Yeah, I think that is where we're going, because she has to get there in order for... Look, A Dream of Spring is going to have probably a very different, very different agenda, shall we say. You know, there's going to be a lot of other things going on that... See what I did there? Mm-hmm. Other things. so I think that we have to get, everybody has to get set up for that in Winds of Winter. So, yes.
And Chloe, do you think that Littlefinger's endgame is the Iron Throne, as people have theorized? Or do you think this story is headed towards a Sansa being the queen in the North endgame?
So I think Littlefinger's game plan is absolutely Iron Throne for Sansa. He wants to go all out. And Littlefinger's the kind of guy who's like, I want to get the establishment so I can set it on fire and then laugh at it and then roll around in my gold dragons. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, oh, I'm just going to screw everyone over on the way because they screwed me over. But I think that when we examine Sansa's kind of role in Endgame through the story, there's a lot to think about, right? Like, she's done so much from watching awful leaders that she continues to be kind of the opposite. Cersei, Littlefinger, yes, the Sweet Robin stuff is suspect, but I do think it's part of her character that she has to realize this is awful and change it. And that's kind of a progression we'll see. I'd like to touch on kind of the implication of Sansa's endgame when you think about a few different things. She's the key to many kingdoms. The Vale, the Riverlands, the North. Hell, her marriage to Tyrion is probably kind of desired for some political play in the Westerlands because, look, Davin is trying his best, right? But, questionable. Yeah. I don't know that she'll solely be queen in the North, a la the throne show endgame. I could see the kingdom splitting differently than 6-1 at the end of the story. I think that could be a difference we might be on the lookout for. But George's original outline back in the 90s for this, he without a doubt changed his mind on her role. And you can see that as early as A Game of Thrones and Clash. His outline plans were that Sansa was going to marry Joffrey, have his kid, regret too late that she, betrayed her family with the arranged marriage that she was put in, whether she wanted it or not. It's there. And in Clash, though, Sansa is a symbol for Northern independence, right? She's bleeding in front of the Iron Throne. The red in the veins of the Weirwood is the same red as the blood that Sansa sheds on the floor of the throne room. It's the blood shed by her grandfather and uncle in that throne room, putting her in some of the most treacherous clutches of villains as a prisoner of war, and having her somehow emerge not like Lady Stoneheart is tremendous. Whether we have the end game, whether she's queen in the North, that's a tremendous change of character for her. It's huge compared to what George originally set out to write as the black sheep of the family. I think there's also something with the wolves that everybody talks about the symbolism that the wolves have, right, for each of them, mm-hmm, yeah, with Grey Wind and Lady and Summer. I feel like Ned's influence is really important when we grasp this, because Sansa is, I know I keep repeating it, but she is going to fulfill Ned 2.0. Lady was the sacrifice. Lady was the one that died from the beginning. It's something people think about. It's clearer every time I revisit that Ned kills Lady and has to let go of Sansa, right? Because she is very much one half of the dead Lyanna in his mind. That is the girl who's in love with crown princes and songs. Arya is the girl that likes swords and battle. When he looks at his daughters, that's what he sees. And when he kills Lady, he disconnects from Sansa. It says it in the text, much like he disconnected from Lyanna and Brandon and Benjen. With Sansa ruling Winterfell, I think it'll be just like Ned. She'll finish what he wanted with her cousin's help, Jon. She'll finish resettling the new gift, right, with free folk and northern lords alike. And she'll rule Winterfell possibly alone, just like Ned, her siblings dead, gone, exiled, one or another, whichever canon or theory you want to go on. Sansa, the girl that dreamed of leaving those cold walls of Winterfell, right, those marble walls, and wanted nothing more than to be away from her family. And in the end, all she wanted was to come home to her family. And in the end, she doesn't even get to keep them. All she has are her people, and she has to give them her love instead. I think that's a really appropriately bittersweet ending, right, for Queen Sansa. I hate the theories about Sansa ending up like Elizabeth, right, the virgin queen never marrying. And there are some paramours I'd like to suggest she take up. We don't have to talk about it, but we can. But I just thinking of her alone in the Godswood, I imagine that if she ends up alone, if the, you know, burden of war and the scars of war for Arya and Jon are too much and they're gone, and Bran might be in the south and Rickon gone, I just see her alone in that large Godswood. And I think she would take the people of the north as her family, right, and fill the halls of Winterfell with all of these laughing children her siblings never got to have.
Yeah, I love that. I want to say that for anyone that watches The Last Kingdom or has read Bernard Cornwell's wonderful series of books that that show is based on, to the Elizabeth parallel, I prefer the Ethel fled Lady of the Mercians parallel with Sansa. Maybe because I thought of it, I don't know.
Yeah, but it's a nice parallel.
But no, it's she pretty much did what you said, and she was, well, in the show and in, I guess in history, real life, she was celibate because of anxiety over what a potential husband or mate might do, which is similar to Elizabeth too. You know, as a way of keeping the power vested in the female. I don't know. That's just, she was also, you know, a more of a warrior queen and sort of, I don't know. I just see so many parallels there. So
given that Sansa has been through such a lot over the pages of A Song of Ice and Fire, and she's really learned her game from abhorrent characters, hasn't she? So realistically, what type of leader can Sansa be, Lady Gwyn?
Well, she's, I would say, as far as what she's learned from other people, she's learned what not to do. That, you know, quote that we probably all know, if I'm ever queen, I'll make them love me, which she thinks, well, she's listening to Cersei give her absolutely horrible advice and do horrible things during the Blackwater. And Sansa's reaction is, God, I could do way better than this. You know, Cersei's telling her all about that rule by fear, which is the whole dichotomy of Lannister Stark. So she is Ned's daughter. She's, like you said, Chloe, Ned 2.0. You know, she's learned leadership lessons, which are based on love and respect, not fear. And she learned those lessons long before any of these other Cretans who have been trying to teach her how to do things ever showed up in her life. So,
a true Stark, Sansa. So, a discussion about Sansa wouldn't be right without mentioning another certain character. Can you guess who I'm going to bring up here for our last question? Patron Sister Winter wonders, as a Sansan, she says, when, where, or how will our hound and his little bird meet up again? In what possible circumstances? Why don't you begin, Lady Gwyn?
So, yes, when, they will. Sandor has unfinished business with both Arya and Sansa, right? So, some people have wondered about some kind of rescue. And actually, we've talked about at the start how, you know, we some of us may have had opinions that had have changed or become more nuanced over time. I'm not ashamed to admit that at one point I really thought, mostly because I really hoped, that Sansa would ride in, or Sandor would ride into the Vale on his, not white horse, but his metaphorical white horse and carry her away.
Or real white horse.
Maybe a real white
Depends
horse.
Depends how romantic you are.
Or where he got the horse.
But it's that's not going to happen. So, you know, I mean, he's located conveniently enough for that to have happened, which is why people thought that thought in the first place. But
Sandor knows stuff, though, Lady Gwyn.
He does. So more importantly, he has to come together with her because he's the only person who, as far as I can tell, he's the only person who can confirm that Littlefinger's knife at her father's throat is what led to her father's betrayal and death.
He is the only one alive from the throne room that can do this. I'm exactly. just saying.
Yes, exactly. So really what I wonder is that, you know, we were talking before about how Jane Poole was written in order in that specific way, in order to lead to a certain point, is Sandor's knowledge or his presence there when Ned was betrayed by Littlefinger, is that the nuts and bolts of the Sandor-Sansa connection? I mean, not saying there's not other stuff that we all observe and like to think about, but, you know, from a narrative point of view, is that kind of what keeps him tied to Sansa's arc all the way to the end?
Yeah, it feels like that's the fated moment. I hope that's the big detail. I think it's a very convenient place right now where Sandor is in the Quiet Isle to where Sansa is in the Vale, and that's obviously uber, like, romantic. I started getting into A Song of Ice and Fire deeper and deeper because 2013, I went on a little site called Tumblr.com, and suddenly I found out there was a thing called Sansan, and I did not know, and someone should have warned me, but they didn't, and now this is where we are, and I will not apologize for the person I have become. That being said, I'm definitely a little more cynical about it now. I think there is definitely a moment that they have to have of like a last little bird moment, you know, where he's like, I don't know, bleeding out and like protecting her or some crap, who knows. But at the same time, everyone wants like Jaime, Brienne, Sandor, everybody to be in the same area and get Sansa. And I think it's going to be hysterically like missed by moments every time, you know, until the very end. And I mean, let's face it, A Feast for Crows is like platonic smut for Sansa and Sandor, only because all they do is think about each other. And you're like, Chloe, how could you say Sandor's thinking about Sansa because we don't have a point of view to tell us that canonically? Actually, we do, because Brienne goes to the Quiet Isle, and when she speaks to the Septons and the Elder Brother, they tell her about how all the novices get to talk one day a week. And then the Elder Brother knows. When Brienne looks at him, he's like, oh, you're looking for Sansa Stark? You know why that is? Because Sandor Clegane, on his one day out of 7 days a week, will not shut up about the Stark sisters, and they want to throttle him. I can tell you that Septon Mirabal and the Elder Brother are like, well, this guy shut up about all of his guilt. But it's there. They're both thinking about each other. I think Sansa will have to see her sad old friend Sandor Clegane before his end, before she releases him. And lets him go deal with his vengeance.
Great thoughts there, Chloe. Thank you.
There we all went.
And Chloe, you've been a fine guest. You've spoken very well today. Why don't you tell us what you're up to creatively? Tell us about your podcast. Spotlight's on you. Give yourself a shout out.
Wow, this is all so sudden. You can find me talking weekly about Jaime Lannister right now. We're getting very close to the end. I'm on a podcast called Girls Gone Canon. We are a podcast consisting of me and Ayra the Metric, Eliana from Maester Monthly, if you guys have heard of that podcast. Great little cast. She is my she's my sword to my shield, right? She's the Arya to my Sansa. We have actually covered Sansa in fall, had Lady Gwyn on for it, but we are doing POV to POV. So we start at the beginning of a character's POV, we go to the end of a character's POV, chapter by chapter. We talk about the stuff in between that happened to keep you refreshed in our lightning rounds. It's very fun. Sometimes there's singing. If you ever come on the podcast, you'll know. There's probably singing. So check us out. We're on Podbean. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/girlsgonecanon. All of the different streaming places. We're there. Look us up. And I also have a blog. It's liesinarborgold.com. Check that out. It's got a fun couple metas and theories hanging out. I'm trying to put some new stuff out. I am utilizing one of our favorite creators, Sanrixian, to help me with some art for it. But it's also like secretly, if she doesn't do the art, then I don't have to finish the essay. You know what I mean? So we'll see. Yes. We'll see. And that's it. Thank you so much for having me. It was a blast to come talk Sansa with you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. It was great to have you. Thanks to everyone who was here listening. Thanks to everyone who will be listening to pre-recorded versions or in the future. We appreciate you. Like we said earlier, we have a new episode in our Winds of Winter Primer series coming out in just a few days. Right now it's in its patron rollout. $5 and up patrons have access as of right this minute. So do come check that out. It's about Sansa, Arya, Bran, and Davos. What's he doing in that group? Just think about that. Next week... Having said that, we're going to be talking about Bran, and our guest is going to be Zach from Game of Thrones. So we are excited for that. So come back next week.
We'll be back next week and all the weeks to come. What the hell? All the Saturdays for the foreseeable future, talking the Winds of Winter POVs, just like today. Thanks so much to everyone who's tuned in. Don't forget to hit the like and subscribe. And if you'd like to support Radio Westeros, please know that we do have a Patreon campaign where patrons can get all manner of benefits, you know, early release, shout outs, all of that kind of thing. Come and join us. And thanks again to you all. Stay safe and see you next time.
Okay. Bye for now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.